Welcome to all of you. I'm Lina Nirmond with my weekly program, Lina Live. Before we'll start my, I would say, exuberantly unique program, I'd like to make a special announcement. I'm going to have an unusual program next Monday, which is not my usual day, but it is very specially unusual day for the nation and for the world. It's a time when finally fascism was defeated. And I decided to dedicate a special program to this incredibly moving event in a historic, political, and personal way. And I invited a very interesting person who is a brilliant politician and a mayor of one of the most important city in New York State, Westchester County. His name is Mayor Hanauer, and he kindly, graciously agreed to have an interview and share his points on the history, politics, and his own mission for the town where he is the mayor. I wanted to make this note very clear to give you an opportunity to save this date and time. And doing so, now I'm going to make a bridge to my program today. It couldn't be more delightful. As I said, it is truly exotically, exuberantly talented musician, singer, producer, and a dancer. And her name is Shenandoah Abelman. We're going to speak with her about all aspects of her life, her creation, and I cannot find a better introduction but to let us listen to her beautiful song, one of many which she wrote with just enormously special sensitivity. I had great difficulties to choose which one to start our program with, and finally I came to the decision to take first song from her album, which called So Fine. Let's hear it. Thank you. You are welcome. I hope that you will give us just an overview in the beginning of your life. This such a eloquent creations. I would connect this to eclecticism in music and in art. I couldn't find more comprehensive and well-rounded words. But here you are. Now we can hear your human voice.
Thank you. So how it kind of all first began?
Absolutely. Just share with us whatever flows.
All right. Well, I was, my father is a bluegrass musician, plays fiddle. And so some of my earliest memories were just kind of house parties with my dad's band, which was called Boot Hill. And they would just get together and practice at our house, and it would end up being kind of like a fun dinner party, music into the evening. And that kind of, that was, you know, that kind of started it all off. So from there, I ended up going to a lot of music festivals as a kid that my dad would play at. So I was around a lot of folk and bluegrass. And at an early age, I just would, as, you know, many youngsters do, sit their folks down and do little performances and make them endure them. And I did, I started doing that as early as I can remember.
Which is what age, roughly?
Probably, definitely by like three or four.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that was kind of my route.
I would not take your mother far from the picture because she did play mandolin, and I hear this timbre and that color a lot in your compositions and your orchestrations.
Yeah, she learned mandolin a little bit later. She started mandolin when I was in about fourth grade, after my parents had separated. And later she picked up the upright bass, and she now plays with her current husband. He plays guitar, and they sing wonderful harmonies together. And she plays mandolin or upright bass with him. And so whenever I go and visit them, they always have little music parties as well. So the tradition has definitely continued.
I would make a little comment, even though there is a separation between people, but there is a very strong marriage with the music in your family.
Yes, it definitely influenced me, definitely. And while I don't really play a traditional bluegrass or folk music, I know that it has influenced my inflections and I think informs kind of my strange style of singing.
I will make one comment of my own, but then I really cannot cannot restrict myself from not saying exactly beautifully put description either by your wonderful publicist, Lydia, or perhaps someone else. But whoever touched your creation with words did an absolutely fabulous job. Because first I read about you. In fact, usually I don't do those things. I never read about musician. I hear first. Uh-huh. I like to get to the source. It just happened that I receive information about you first and then your musical material to the best of my knowledge. No, actually, it came together, but for some reason, I did read first. Actually, I'm taking back again what I said. I did read about you because your publicist kindly shared with me her impression, and I was flying in my impressions and already your music and already your movements, just a reading about you. And I feel that in one sense, the fact that you being brought up in this grassroots of music and that you had this very flourishing and yet fantastic foundation of the folk music gave you this tremendous freedom for the future compositions, because what can be more resourceful and more profound than a folk music? And I hear it in your melodies, yet I certainly can hear some, I hate to say conventional harmonies, but the way you're braiding with the major and minor subtleties, where it's almost in between the tones, I found that your first song, which we just heard, has a, such a discreet but a little bit deceptive message, because even though there is a very subtle monotony, but it has its own almost like a crystal bridge which leads to your emotions. So I would say that you have this just a wonderful musical vocabulary, and I will bring that description which I was raving about your style, and it says that from doo-wop, old-time rhythm and blues, to folk and country music with a retrofitted German cabaret. This is quite a spectrum.
It is. It's quite a range. And I think that being raised in this country, there's just so many different types of music that we're exposed to. I think it's impossible to not be influenced by many different styles. And while I don't want to really necessarily dilute the music with too many styles of music, I think that I have to acknowledge their influence over in me, and whether or not they necessarily describe the music, they at least describe the influences. So,
and you know what, you did succeed, because it is almost distinctly different. It's a beautiful contradiction, because in one sense, from the first moment one hear your melody or motive or even touch of a harmony or a little moment of orchestration, it is a distinctly different. It's something ear and soul turns to it immediately. And yet, after all, you feel very much at home.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. I'm glad.
Because what you just described, I like to impose a little bit. We're going just about to hear you another song, and my imposition has to do with my personal recollections, because your second song, I had it be difficult to determine the genre, because it was yet so familiar, just like you described that you didn't want to sound or imitate or to be part of somebody else's world. So you distinctly, again, in your own element, and yet I felt such incredible memories from my childhood when I was dancing not as beautifully as you did, but certainly matching my own vibration of the rhythm.
Wow.
So I like to hear your Dink song, and perhaps then after this you will tell us a little background for that composition.
All right.
How about that? It's okay?
Uh-huh. Sounds good.
Wonderful. So here's Dick's song, which is written by my very special, talented, and uniquely artistic Shenandoah Ebelman.
Oh, this is actually a cover. This is the one cover, just to let you know.
Oh.
Yeah. This is an old traditional.
Ah. So it is so when you said it's a cover, can you explain in a little greater detail?
Yes, this is a traditional song recorded by Alan Lomax Jr. In the Appalachians a long time ago when he first started archiving the music from the Appalachian Mountains and things like that. And this was written by a woman, Dink, about her hardships with the men in her life. And later it was covered by Bob Dylan and Dave Van Ronk and people like that. So yeah, this is the one soul cover of the songs on this album.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. And now we indeed going to hear Dink's song. Cannot imagine a warmer engineered beginning. What a beautiful balance. Well, you did give us a clarification, and I certainly benefited from that. Is there anything else we can talk about this, perhaps in the sense of a collaboration you with other musicians, since you did perform this written by someone else?
Yes. This song was, I started messing around with it about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, and there was the little guitar theme is a little theme that I just started working with, and so I kind of arranged it in a different way than it had traditionally been played or that I'd ever heard it. And so when I began working with musicians that then became the band that I work with and perform, they all kind of contributed definitely to the sound of all of the songs, but definitely that one. The keyboard player kind of added the definitely very distinctive doo-wop-y sound, and the guitar player played a kind of like a solo that's not really necessarily his style, but he just felt like it called for that.
He was polite. He was very polite, and he wanted to adapt to the music and to the group.
Yes, he's an incredible player, and he and it just seemed like the way that song was going, the direction it was going, it just called for a really kind of bluesy, showy kind of solo. So he went there, even though that's not necessarily the way he plays. But yeah, it was really fun. I'd been listening to a lot of Los Zafiros, which is a Cuban doo-wop band in the early 60s. And so I think that arrangement was definitely influenced from listening to that.
Exactly. And you see, I remembered, even I was brought up back to 60s, so now you actually confirming exactly why. So much for the connections of the times and different genres.
Yeah.
How open music is, so kind, so open mind that I wish some people will have, as flexible and as open mind as music is. Let's go to your life in California, because originally indeed you are from not San Francisco, you are from Northern California, I believe.
Mm-hmm. About an hour and a half north of San Francisco.
Right. And you actually established a very interesting sound group, which has exciting, engaging name, Yard Dogs Road Show.
Uh-huh.
And again, going to this marvelous description of your work and your life, it says, expressing a haunting, nourished sound, counterbalanced by bursts of joy and infectious energy. So how that played a role in your memory, and what place did it take in your development as a singer and as a producer? Because it's a show already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely an influential time. I was with the Yard Dogs for almost 9 years, and they've been around actually for almost 15. Started off as a three-piece jug band, and gradually developed into a backing band for a puppet show. And then eventually, one of the founding members wrote a book called Hobo, A Man's Travel Riding Trains Throughout America. And with the publishing of that book, the band kind of got together and started developing a stage show to accompany the book tour, and that's when I joined. So it was the first time that there was an actual set and really fabulous costume changes, and it was very exciting. And so we slowly developed f- first year I was with them, we did a 3-week tour, and until eventually we were doing 8 to 9 months touring, 8 to 9 months of the year touring, with breaks in between, of course. But it was a lot of touring. It was a lot of national touring, and we did make it over to Dublin and France. We played at the Glastonbury Festival. We spent a lot of time in Portugal. So that was really, really fun. But we definitely spent a lot of time touring the States. And it was a 15-person production. And in the States, we lived on a bus. And there was bunks for all of us, and a kitchen, and cubbies. But that's where I more or less developed my costuming skills, because we made most of our costumes and props, and we did choreography for the dancing numbers, and I wrote the songs that I sang. And I first began before I knew how to read or write music, and so it was definitely this evolution of, I was in music school, I began music school while I just first started, so it was interesting to see the development of explaining how a song went before I knew how to read or write, and then gradually being able to write out the charts and record the songs so that the band could learn, because most people in the band actually didn't really know how to read or write at the time either. But we all kind of grew and developed together. So it was fun. And it was excellent experience being on stages, huge stages. Playing at festivals for thousands of people. So it definitely made me more comfortable on stage and able to interact with the audience before when I first started, because I had been performing already most of my life. I've been performing, but I had been more, when I would sing, it was very intimate and I would be very inward. And when I would dance, it would be very outward. So there was this interesting thing that I kind of held the singing to be a little bit more sacred. And through performing with the Yard Dogs, I was able to exude more energy and be more outward when I would sing, and kind of combine the outwardness of dancing and performing with the singing. So that was really, really fun.
This is truly worldly experience, and again, strikingly original. I'd like to ask you the history of the name. I love dogs. Many people do. Why you choose to have such engaging name? A little bit of history, as I mentioned.
Well, the Yard Dogs is it was actually formed before I joined, so it was formed about 15 years ago, and a yard dog is an abandoned train car, I believe. So it all relates back to the early roots of the band with train hopping and kind of this really funny jug band, how it first began.
I see.
Yeah.
So it, actually inspiration and idea came from there.
Yeah, yes. That was the name of that project. I was just a part of that band that already existed.
I didn't really
have any influence on the name, but I thought it was a good one.
Certainly quite striking and memorable. I was touched by your comment when you've been traveling and obviously you've been away from home.
Mm-hmm.
You said that sometimes to do what you love, you have to go away from those that you love.
Uh-huh.
Extremely profound, and this is universal experience for any performing artist. And to go a little deeper in a philosophy of this, we're talking about almost like a conflict of love. And
yes.
You certainly probably experiencing deeper love in every level, because you're doing what you love the most. And even though it is somewhat sacrifice going away from whom you love, but I guess when you connect again, you're connecting in a newer, deeper level. What is your emotional road when you took such an extraordinarily interesting tour?
Yes, I think that is definitely a predicament that most all, like you said, most all performers come to terms with or have to deal with. And it's very interesting, but it does make the heart grow stronger. and actually, that is the theme of this entire album, is all mostly about leaving life on the road, that longing to come home. And I think that is definitely the theme that I worked with, which I couldn't help. It was just my husband was at home, and that was definitely, and, you know, it's just, it's tough being on the road in many ways, but it definitely made it that much sweeter to come home. And also, when I would come home, I would have 2 weeks at home or so, and that would, I was able to focus all my energy during the day on writing and arranging songs. So it was a very, it enabled a very focused, rich time, because I was so excited to come home and so happy to be with my husband. And then also it gave me the focused time to be able to work on these songs that were fresh and with all these, you know, new emotions and experiences that I'd had. And Beautiful Ladies is one of the songs on the album that kind of talks about being away, traveling through the different towns, winding through the roads, and all the beautiful ladies is kind of all the towns that we go to, all the towns we drive through, all the lovely sights that we get to see along the way, of course. And then there's the dancing girls that are in the band, which it was a song to them as well. So that was kind of that is more of like one of the traveling songs. And then the first song that you played, So Fine, was definitely from my husband, which was just so, you know, that longing that I experienced being away.
Yes, and I'm not surprised that you wrote All the Beautiful Ladies, not All the Beautiful Men, because mm-hmm. you already have one.
Mm-hmm.
So I cannot imagine a better, more harmonious introduction, indeed, to your beautiful song, All the Beautiful Ladies, after which we will continue our very interesting talk with more music, more facts of very creative life of Shenandoah, and she will tell us more how we can find her in the internet world, including, I believe, YouTube and whatever other information she will share with us. So we will continue experience more and more wonderful world of Cher. And now let's go to All the Beautiful Ladies.
Thank you.
I hate to step into after such just a glorious, almost acoustic emotionalism, if I could say. I felt gliding. I felt that you break away from stage and miles. It's something among most beautiful ambiance of mountains, this air, and your most exquisite orchestration. What kind of instruments there? Some of them just melted in all these obertons. Can you open the secret? What is what is that golden combination?
Well, there are there's trombone and trumpet in the horn section, and we had a cellist come in mainly just for the part where the horns were very heavy during the bridge. And then there's guitar, drums, and piano, and organ.
Wow. You know, it's almost almost deeply unique, unheard of combination of the instruments. It's almost like a miniature symphony orchestra. Mm-hmm. Yet you have this classic pop culture combination. You didn't forget about the piano. And of course, your glowing voice, that was such an inspiration. I felt that you've been painting at the same time. It was just truly remarkable experience, very complex and yet extremely inspiring and very light.
Thank you. I wanted
to ask you perhaps a little bit of a technical grounded question. How long did it take you to write this song?
I didn't feel like it took very long. It kind of wrote itself. The bridge was further developed by guitar player Seth Johnson, who's in the band with me. He came up with the wonderful walk down. It's kind of like a Bach style. I'm not sure, just the way that he walks down and the chords that he chose with the passing notes. He came up with that. And that was really, really, that kind of, it gave it so much more. I feel like it really bumped it up energetically. It's fun to dance to that part as well. I have a little fan dance that I do in that section. And so that came about a little bit later. But the song, it just kind of seemed to write itself for the most part.
There is always, I call unfinished duet between the music and words. Different school of thinking, different experience, old-fashioned. You write music for existing words, but sometimes words can be written later, inspired by the music. There is no right or wrong. It's just what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Coming back to your childhood, which was very fascinating when sound was more dear to you and more natural than actual wording and writing, I will make a little leap in coming to your mature compositional years. What indeed words and music, who is going to win? What is the preference? What is your thing?
Definitely the melody and the chord progressions and the music wins for me over the words. And it's funny because my husband is a writer, and he will pay attention to all the words in a song, and he'll remember all the words. And I don't remember hardly any words in other songs. I just remember the melody, and I sing. I kind of make up words, I think, or I make up choruses. But I always will sing along the melody, and I will basically tune out the lyrics unless I'm trying to learn them, which is pretty funny. I don't know how I've been able to completely separate them, but for me, definitely melody and tone and timbre prevail. And words tend to be kind of a struggle when I'm writing the lyrics. So they typically come later.
You know, you reminded me one song by Rachmaninoff. It's called Vocalese. There is no words there, but it is such a passionate recitativo. And that was so much in that song which you just sang, because, frankly, I'm with you. I'm a bit lazy to listen to the words. And if I catch few here and there, this is okay. But I'm not going to miss. I will not feel very guilty if I don't. And with that performance, I hardly felt, actually, the material needs for wording, because you've been reciting, it was more of a dialogue with the wind, with the air of the nature. And you just explained why. I like to ask you, why from California all the way to New York?
Well, I think New York is one of the main destinations for people in the arts, because there's just a bit more opportunity. Seemingly, there's more opportunity here to meet people, to be able to perform in wonderful spaces. It's just a different pace, and I had always been drawn to it, and it just took a little while to get here. So I moved here 3 years ago, and it's been really fun and fast and furious. But yeah, it's been really wonderful. But I do feel the desire for more trees and fresh air.
Yes, so,
and gardens and things like that.
I will inject a little frank note, and I hope that air of New York will not criticize me by much. But I would say that almost every performer should experience this pulse and, as you said, fast environment and momentum of New York. But it is exceedingly challenging now because of the elements of our society with all this computerized digital and, unfortunately, very strong commercial emphasis on creativity. It became that much more challenging, especially for highly creative musicians. And I certainly hope that you will find somewhat the distance, space, and breathing moments, rubato, as we would say in music, where you can continue to expand, because I cannot imagine more of the limitless in the breathing and the rhythmic feeling musician than you are. And that brings me to another question about your YouTube appearance and also the event which will take place on May 28th. So perhaps you can share this with us.
Yes, there is a little bit of live footage that someone put up from our show at Brooklyn Bowl on Saturday, last Saturday. And so there's a little bit of live footage. It is from iPhone, I believe. So it's not the best quality, but it does capture two songs, which was really, really nice. And then we are gearing up for our CD release party, which will be at Spike Hill in Williamsburg on the 28th. And that's very exciting. And if also to mention that on our website is ShenandoahAndTheKnight.com. That is the name of the band, is Shenandoah and the Knight. And Shenandoah and the Knight, N-I-G-H-T.com, is where you can buy songs digitally and hear about where we're playing. So
Wonderful. I just wanted to ask you, what's the name of those songs on YouTube which we can hear?
That is a song called So Low Then So High, and we've not recorded it yet. And then there's Beautiful Ladies with a special appearance from Zoe Jakes, who is a phenomenal dancer who danced with me for that number. That was really, really fun. So, yeah, that and that song was the first song I mentioned, So Low Then So High, was I wrote recently, and it is more about New York experience, being so low and then so high. It is a struggle to be here, and it is amazing also. So it has the ups and downs. But that's a really fun song that I like doing. So I was really happy to see that captured live.
And again, you made a lovely introduction to your song, So Long, which we're about to listen to, after which we'll continue our conversation again.
Great.
So
great.
Here, So Long.
My heart, it's been so long.
Well, that was such a game of harmonic progression. I sound too academic, but I couldn't help it because it's such a brave, very romantic, brings me back to perhaps Liszt, who was not much caring of a grudgement relation. He just was comparing colors and sudden shifts. And somehow it had this beautiful internal logic. And that's what I found in that song. Hmm. need to mention that you are a graduate from University of San Francisco and that you did study the jazz and vocal.
Mm-hmm.
How much of the actually conventional musical education you had? I almost hate to ask that question because it brings somewhat a bit of stamp in your most incredibly unlimited romanticism. But I'm just curious because there is a very clear appreciation and respect for using harmony, for using even subtle melodic shifts. So it's a wonderful, almost perfect, nearly perfect combination between your talent and what you learn.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, I really enjoyed in terms of being in schools, I really enjoyed being in ensembles, specifically an Afro-Cuban ensemble. And basically what I learned from school and what I applied to the music that I make mostly was just in the most basic sense. And it just kind of gave me more practice on the piano, which is what I write on now, and giving me the tools for just basic chord structure. And then from there, I just kind of played around and listened to what sounded right to me, which is, honestly, we're all accustomed to music going in certain progressions and resolving in certain ways. And so I think in that sense, from being in music school, I use very basic skills from that experience, and then just being a person in the world listening to music and pop music. I think that also informed my songwriting. So, yeah, I think it was a wonderful experience. And I did, you know, there are certain kind of choices for harmonics that I learned from school. But I would say that I do it in a very loose manner, and I just kind of hear what sounds good, plunking away.
Eventually, that's how it should be, but I could not resist to hear this ground and the fact that you connected to the piano and you could physically make those chords and be aware of some of those progressions. And yes, you put it very lovely. They have to be resolved somehow. And this internal dynamic between dissonant going to another dissonant or going to the to resolution. And of course, this famous square is a tonic, subdominant, dominant, and tonic. Of course, all of these things, if they put in a very improvisational manner mm-hmm. with a foundation which you have, which is a country music, mm-hmm. and almost ideal, pure background which you have. And then this more academic education, I found that you have very rare, invisibly, but very balanced background development, and you're just a unique talent, very fragile and yet extraordinarily powerful. I like to ask you at the end to repeat again where we can find you, and again this event on May 28th, and then after this we will have to conclude our beautiful program. So, Shea, please tell us again how we can listen to you.
This project is Shenandoah in the Night. That is the name of the band. And it is shenandoahinthenight.com is where you can buy the music or just listen to it digitally. And then it will also give you show information. And we are playing at Spike Hill in Brooklyn, in Williamsburg, on May 28th. We go on at 10 p.m. It is a part of Delhi Magazine Best of 2011 music festival that they're putting on. And this is a specific showcase featuring women-fronted bands. And we have the 10 p.m. slot, which is really awesome. So, yes. Thank you so much for having me here.
It is more than pleasure. It's just the beginning, and I'm so much looking forward to hear more of your music. One day, I hope not for too long, I will be able to see you dancing.
Yes.
Certainly didn't cover connection of the genre and how you're doing those both things. I'm so fascinated by the fact when people can sing and dance and they hear and they communicating with the public. You have it all already. And I wanted to thank you so, so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Sharing your beautiful talent. And I'm concluding wishing the best to Shenandoah Ebelman, whose talent is very unique, greatly, greatly needed and appreciated by all of us. I will say that that was my another edition of Lena Live, and I will send to all of you very warm regards with thanks to BBS, very handsome men who are patiently doing their wonderful job to accommodate all of us and to show their sensitivity to all of us. And until next Monday, as I mentioned, for the very special show I'm going to have at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I'm Lena Mirmont with Lena Live. Until next week.